If Tor is an anonymous remailer, meaning a protocol facilitating the anonymous forwarding and receiving of messages between peers, Nostr can function as an anonymous bulletin board. CoinJoin coordinators can publish their services via a Nostr event type, and CoinJoin wallets can be enabled to automatically pull from those relays to display within their clients. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anyone else you know. And we have got a piece. This one is from BitcoinMagazine.com. This one published pretty recently, March 28th. It is by Lola Leetz. Lola Leetz on, I will have the link to Lola's Twitter. And I just realized Lola has to be on Nostr, but I don't think I did this whole episode and I don't think I'm following or have noticed Lola on Nostr, which means I gotta find, I don't know if she posts her public key here. But anyway, Lola is a great resource on privacy stuff. Super hardcore about it. Will argue with you because you're wrong about it and she's right. but there's some really great stuff. And this is a really great article about the Nostr privacy paradox. Says the subtitle, which I really, really like, says, while Nostr is by no means a privacy protocol, it could bring potential improvements to Bitcoin privacy. And it's largely about the dynamic of what it means to have a sovereign, censorship-resistant, fully encrypted, like direct message, fully encrypted protocol. And that you can identify and you contact users by this protocol without a centralized entity. And that this is actually fundamentally a huge step forward for Bitcoin privacy for multiple reasons. And I talk about a few other reasons and a personal experience that I had that I think reflects on these things really well in the guy's take afterward. But I read this article, and also just a note that it does get a little bit technical at a couple of different places because she's explaining some of the technical pieces like BIP47 and payment codes and these things. But if you get a little bit lost in the audio because a lot of these things don't, you know, sometimes you have to kind of like stare at them and think about them a little bit. It's not that big a deal. We will go over them briefly or what matters about them at the end. And then talk about the implications. So if you get a little bit lost at one or two points during the read, don't worry about it. We will cover the important implications of these things after the read. Really quick, let's thank our sponsors for today, and then we will jump into the read. A marvelous, glorious thank you to CoinKite and the Cold Card Hardware Wallet and their Bitcoin-only hardware and security devices that have been around for as long as I have, they have just always been here. Always building amazing products for Bitcoin, and the Cold Card is the OG hardware wallet, and the Cold Card Mark IV is phenomenal if you have not checked it out, and you can get 9% off with code BitcoinAudible. And then when you're trying to get Bitcoin, you're going to want to do two things. You're going to want to set up an automatic savings plan with Swan Bitcoin, automatic purchase and automatic withdrawal, and they are sorting out the North Carolina crap. And they will be back in action hopefully sooner rather than later. I will keep you updated as things unfold. And speaking of fold, the other way that you're going to want to stack sats is by using a dollar debit card that pays you sats to use it. 1% back on everything plus extra spins just for using it to get sats every single day. If you are not doing this yet, you must check it out. All the links and discount codes will be available right in the description of this podcast. With that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled The Nostr Privacy Paradox by Lola Leetz. While Nostr is by no means a privacy protocol, it could bring potential improvements to Bitcoin privacy. NOSTR, short for Notes and Other Stuff Transmitted Through Relays, is a new communication protocol developed in 2021 by Lightning Network developer Fiat Jaff, which evolved out of Elinbit's developer Ben Ark's attempt at a fully decentralized marketplace called Diagon Alley. As opposed to other communication solutions, which mostly function via dumb clients and smart servers, NOSTR offers smart clients and dumb servers, which heightens censorship resistance for users. In NOSTR, all data is stored locally with users and merely distributed via relays, rather than stored on central servers, such as via Twitter. In the case of social media, NOSTR increases censorship resistance, as users are enabled to fully own their own content and profiles. In light of recent controversies around Twitter's censorship policies, users began migrating toward the federated communication solution Mastodon. However, in Mastodon, ownership over content and profiles lies with those running the Mastodon servers that users signed up with. While federations such as Mastodon offer more censorship resistance than centralized servers, as users are able to simply sign up to another server when censored, criticism has arisen around potential censorship on Mastodon through server owners. In December 2022, the NOSTR community received a 14 Bitcoin grant from Twitter founder Jack Dorsey, which brought unprecedented attention to the protocol. As applications built on NOSTR evolved, the mobile client Damas jumped to number one in social networking in the iOS App Store in China, resulting in its ban. In an apparent effort to contain the hashtag MarchOffTwitter, Twitter CEO Elon Musk shortly banned the publication of NOSTR-related content, along with bans on other third-party platforms such as Instagram, but to no avail. While NOSTR is not a privacy protocol per se, among other issues, clients by default leak users' IP addresses to relays, the NOSTR protocol could bring improvements to Bitcoin privacy. Improving privacy and scalability of BIP47. BIP47, or BIP47, is a Bitcoin improvement proposal to create reusable payment codes while protecting the privacy of users for recurring payments. Without BIP47, users need to tediously generate new addresses by hand to avoid address reuse. When a user reuses an address for transactions, the user enables anyone watching the blockchain to easily cluster all transactions belonging to the address reused and form a graph of the user's payment history and net worth. The prevention of address reuse is therefore a privacy best practice in Bitcoin and already implemented in many Bitcoin wallets by default. However, when a user aims to establish recurring payments with another party, such as in a merchant-customer relationship, a frequent generation of new addresses can be inconvenient. With BIP47, a customer can generate a set of addresses to use for payments for the merchant. If a customer purchases products monthly, the merchant would need to send the customer an address each month. With BIP47, the customer creates a dedicated payment code for the merchant, which functions similarly to an extended public key. This allows the customer to automatically generate new addresses for the merchant, instead of the merchant needing to create addresses for the customer. BIP47 makes use of notification addresses, which are monitored by HD wallets for outputs. In a notification transaction, the merchant sends the customer a blinded public key and chain code via the OpReturn field, together with a shared secret to keep the shared addresses private on the public blockchain. This exchange creates several issues due to the architecture of the Bitcoin network. The first two are economic. A notification transaction consists of 80 bytes, which can become expensive for users when fees on the Bitcoin network are high. Notification transactions, in addition, create unsendable outputs, which bloat the UTXO set over time. This increases the computing load on Bitcoin nodes, who, at the time, need to store the entire UTXO set, meaning every Bitcoin output that has not been used as a new input to ensure the validity of transactions. A notification transaction creates so-called toxic change. When a user receives change from a notification transaction and spends the change to a third party, anyone watching the blockchain is able to correlate the user's recurring payments to their non-recurring payments, even when addresses are not reused. A notification address also only exists once for each wallet. If a merchant wanted to establish recurring payments with 10 customers, anyone watching the blockchain is able to gain insight into the merchant's customer base, as all 10 customers would need to create notification transactions for the merchant to the same notification address. Instead of using notification transactions to exchange payment codes between merchants and customers, payment codes could be exchanged via Nostr. As opposed to other communication methods, Nostr is suitable for the exchange of BIP47 payment codes, as no central authority exists to potentially censor the exchange of messages. At the same time, all direct messages on Nostr are encrypted by default, eliminating the need to compute shared secrets. By making use of BIP47 via Nostr, users can avoid the creation of UTXO set bloat via unspendable outputs and eliminate the correlation of recurring versus non-recurring payments, as well as the publication of customer bases through the avoidance of toxic change and the reuse of notification addresses. Author's note: storing the entire current UTXO set for Bitcoin nodes may potentially be eliminated in the future via the implementation of UTXO, which shifts the burden of proving that a transaction spends a valid UTXO to the owner of the UTXO, reducing the storage requirements from gigabytes to kilobytes. Nostr Pay to Endpoint. In Bitcoin, blockchain analysis services operate the heuristic of common input ownership to map transactions to identities. Within this heuristic, a transaction containing different public keys used as inputs is classified as belonging to one person. Due to its UTXO-based architecture, through which inputs and outputs of transactions are linked, the Bitcoin protocol is also prone to subset sum analysis. In subset sum analysis, adversaries are able to calculate the probability of inputs and outputs belonging to the same entity, even when different public keys are used as inputs to one transaction. For example, if a transaction has inputs of 1, 4, 7, 23, and 6, and outputs of 5 and 36, it can be deduced that input 1 and 4 and inputs 7, 23, and 6 belong to the same entity. Pay to Endpoint, or P2EP, is a privacy-preserving reinvention of Satoshi Nakamoto's Pay to IP, or P2IP, coded into the original Bitcoin client. One form of P2EP transaction are pay joins, which are transactions designed to break the common input ownership heuristic. In a pay join transaction, both the sender and the receiver contribute inputs to a transaction to break the common input heuristic. With pay joins, users exchange information about what UTXOs will be used as inputs via any communication channel, such as a Tor onion, which functions as the input to construct a partially signed Bitcoin transaction, or PSBT. Once both parties have agreed to the terms and signed the transaction, a pay join transaction looks just like any other Bitcoin transaction on chain. Because involved parties act as both sender and receiver, a pay join transaction breaks the common ownership heuristic as well as subset sum analysis. Parties may contribute inputs of 3 and 5, while the transaction generates outputs of 6 and 2. The problem: pay join transactions are complicated to coordinate, as participants have to be online at the same time when using a ClearNet domain or Tor onion endpoints. If a user initiates a P2EP transaction and, for example, closes their computer or otherwise disturbs network connectivity, the transaction cannot be communicated. In Nostr, communication is asynchronous. Users fetch information from relays once network connectivity is restored. By using Nostr keys instead of Tor onions as endpoints for pay-to-endpoint transactions, pay-to-endpoint transactions can be coordinated more easily. Another implementation of P2EP is the much-debated LNURL. With LNURL, instead of tediously needing to generate new invoices for each transaction, users are able to receive a static endpoint pointing at a web server to automatically generate new invoices. However, because web servers are reliant on the Global Domain Name Service, or DNS, users of LNURL inevitably reveal their identity to the hosting provider, as well as their IP address to payees, if no proper precautions are taken. Wide adoption of LNURL would therefore be a detriment to the pseudonymity of the Lightning Network. Instead of using a web server as the endpoint for LNURL, users could use Nostr keys as endpoints for LNURL transactions to conceal their identities. Nostr for CoinJoins. While a payjoin is great to break the common ownership heuristic as well as subset sum analysis, payjoins are unable to offer privacy to both sender and receiver toward the cooperating party. Payjoins are essentially two-party coinjoins, limited to two participants. This means that both sender and receiver are aware of their own inputs and outputs, leaving the inputs and outputs of their partner identifiable. Unless a payjoin is facilitated with coinjoin transactions, users risk revealing their wallet balances, as well as past and future transactions, to their payjoin partners. In anonymous amount credential systems, such as Wasabi Wallet's protocol for coinjoin coordination, Wabi-Sabi, Nostr keys can function as communication endpoints for the coordination of a coinjoin transaction. This enables the sender and receiver of a coinjoin transaction to exchange the credentials needed to participate in CoinJoin rounds, essentially enabling a form of discrete payments within a CoinJoin. With the use of Nostr keys as endpoints in CoinJoins, cooperating parties remain unaware of their counterparties' balances and transactions by hiding in the crowd. At the same time, using Nostr keys as endpoints for CoinJoin transactions helps PayJoin users save on fees by facilitating payments directly within the CoinJoin, rather than CoinJoining to facilitate the payment after. Another use for Nostr in CoinJoins lies in the discovery of coordinators. While most CoinJoin coordinators run behind Tor to obscure the identity of CoinJoin participants, users are currently unable to easily discover new coordinators to join, with the exception of JoinMarket, a CoinJoin marketplace targeted toward more advanced CoinJoin users. While CoinJoin users are able to add custom coordinators to Wasabi Wallet, a trivial task as easy as exchanging a URL in the backend, no way exists to automate the process of updating coordinators due to the lack of a platform for publication. Instead, to discover new coordinators, users must search social media and forums, such as Reddit or Twitter, to add coordinators manually. However, the publication of a coordinator service via social media or forums may pose a risk to coordination providers, depending on the policies applied to the service, as certain pages may easily be shut down. If Tor is an anonymous remailer, meaning a protocol facilitating the anonymous forwarding and receiving of messages between peers, Nostr can function as an anonymous bulletin board. CoinJoin coordinators can publish their services via a Nostr event type, and CoinJoin wallets can be enabled to automatically pull from those relays to display within their clients. The broadcasting of coordinator servers via Nostr, such as facilitated by BTC Pay Server CoinJoin plugin, and proposed in the Lightning-enabled CoinJoin software Vortex, can eliminate the need to manually search for and add CoinJoin coordinators and CoinJoin clients, helping to further decentralize the CoinJoin coordination landscape. Circumventing IP requirements with Nostr. As touched upon previously, the Nostr protocol was originally conceptualized to realize a fully decentralized marketplace called Diagon Alley. As the Nostr protocol evolved, Diagon Alley became the Elembits extension Nostr Markets, a Nostr-native marketplace which enables merchants and customers to run and interact with online shops via relays. In Nostr Markets, customers can subscribe to a merchant's public key to fetch products from relays instead of accessing a merchant's site via a web shop. This increases the censorship resistance of online shops, as merchants are not dependent on seizable websites. Rather, a merchant's shop is hosted with all relays the shop sets up to communicate with. Even if the merchant's server were to be seized, its shop could easily be set up at a different location, as all products are stored with relays on the Nostr network. Nostr Markets handles order and payment coordination via encrypted Nostr direct messages, while payments are facilitated through the Lightning Network. In addition to its censorship resistance, The Ellenbits extension Nostr Markets enables fully anonymous marketplaces. Instead of exposing a merchant's IP to the whole world, both merchants and customers only reveal their IPs to the relays they connect to, which can easily be mitigated by running a client or shop behind Tor. As an upside to fully running a shop behind Tor, which makes a shop only accessible via the Tor browser and .onion web pages, Nostr Markets can run in any web browser or smartphone, improving the user experience of privacy-preserving client-server communications. Because payments are negotiated via encrypted Nostr direct messages and facilitated via the Lightning Network, payments in Nostr Markets remain comparatively private as long as the shop's Lightning node runs behind Tor. As a payment coordination direct message is indistinguishable from other direct messages in Nostr. Another way to circumvent the requirement of IP addresses in server-client communications is Nostr REST. REST, or short for Representational State Transfer, is part of the software architecture of the World Wide Web, used to facilitate communication between servers and clients via GET, POST, PUT, DELETE, and PATCH requests. But when a client sends a REST request to a server, IP addresses are revealed, potentially revealing personally identifiable information. On GitHub, EscapeE proposed a REST API bridge built on Nostr, called Nostr REST. By using Nostr keys without identification headers, both users and server operators do not need to know the IP addresses of their counterparts. A Nostr REST implementation can therefore improve the privacy of Bitcoin applications using REST, as servers do not need the client's IP addresses. One such example could be the running of custodial Chalmian eCash mints, a form of anonymous amount credentialed systems. In an eCash mint, the mint operator does not know the balances or value exchanged by its users. However, due to the current architecture of REST, it does learn the user's IP address, unless running behind Tor by default, such as in the eCash system cache. But implementing and managing Tor support is tedious. With the Nostr REST bridge, projects can easily preserve the privacy of their users. By running an eCash mint behind Tor, using Nostr REST to communicate between server and clients, communication can be facilitated asynchronously, while both server operator and user only learn each other's public keys, eliminating the risk of identification via IP. And that wraps up Lola Leet's The Nostr Privacy Paradox. Let's take a quick break right here and hit our sponsor, and then I want to do a little guy's take on this and also talk about a lot of the reasons why, first, privacy is not a straightforward thing, but why these additional layers of technology and additional solutions to these previous protocols actually fundamentally alter the privacy on the other protocols and other networks we use. But real quick, let's hit our sponsor and then we'll jump in. Guys, now I know I've told you some really great ways to store your Bitcoin and to keep them safe and to move them from place to place, but don't stick a cold card up your butt. I mean, a friend told me, someone that I know of told me that it's not a good idea and to not do it. If you need that, that's what the open dime is for. Just not the cold card. When they call it the cypherpunk calculator, it's because it's the size of a calculator. And that enough should make you consider the complications in this situation. Because it's a wonderful hardware wallet. It's got NFC. It's got the brick pin security feature. Its default setup is air gapped. It is a phenomenal hardware wallet. It's just not for that. The cold card is for your pocket or your laptop bag or your safe. The tap signer is the hardware security device for your actual wallet, your physical wallet. And the open dime is the one that might work for what we were talking about. You can check them all out at the CoinKite store. Go to bitcoinaudible.com/coldcard. It'll take you right there, and you can get 9% off with code Bitcoin Audible. Now you have a discount and a little piece of advice to save you a lot of pain. Check them out. And I know this because a friend who I know, who is not me, told me. All right. So when I say, when I mentioned that I think these additional protocols and solving the communication and the censorship resistant resistance problem at other layers on the internet and through other information channels, the reason why this has a huge impact, a fundamental impact on Bitcoin privacy, is because of how privacy leaks occur. Remember again, first, Bitcoin is pseudonymous. But in addition to that, is that Bitcoin isn't actually tied to IP addresses. It's not actually tied to anybody's identity in the obvious sense that it's not pseudonymous. Where these things leak, where these connections are made, are actually in other domains. It's when we use exchanges and interface with dollars, with literally traditional finance and the KYC nightmare that that system is. It's when we use open ClearNet protocols to send communications. It's when we use social media that records our IP addresses, that has our credit card and, you know, payment information tied to our account, or they require you to verify that you are human in some way. This is where the privacy leaks on Bitcoin occur. I've talked about this a lot, that I think the core issue, the major issue of Bitcoin privacy, is predominantly an issue present during the transition phase, when you have to do so much interaction and you're so few steps away from the traditional finance system or the traditional KYC environment. Thinking about these heuristics of tying addresses together and, you know, tracing transactions through multiple steps and multiple, you know, change addresses and like which wallet might this be. Like the more and more hops you get away from a KYC exchange that said this is explicitly this person and explicitly this address that has withdrawn, like physical location, that has withdrawn Bitcoin to this Bitcoin address, to this UTXO that we associate with their ownership, which technically that's not even necessarily the case. Particularly with a lot of noobs, they might legitimately withdraw to someone that they're trying to pay. They treat their exchange balance like a wallet, which is a terrible idea, but it happens. So even that first step is only a high probability guess. Like, none of this stuff is exact science, but without a doubt, that's ownership of Bitcoin, like that is the major privacy leak. And the thing is that it's always just like another 2 to 3 steps away from a KYC exchange. So you can easily kind of map the path from one to the next because you've got so many pools of data with explicit confirmation or explicit KYC of who you are dealing with and who specifically owns these coins and this address in order to make inferences from. And then you can easily bridge the gap with the rest of the, you know, the sum analysis and the peel chain analysis or whatever to move from one address to the next until you get to another KYC address or balance or whatever. But when you have a vibrant Bitcoin economy, when you have a vibrant circular economy with many, many different transactions, and it's just from person to person, from person to business, from computer to computer. And even better, you have a lot of people using the Lightning Network. So balances are actually being exchanged with no permanent record. And you have extremely few, far, far fewer points of contact where there is explicit identity or explicit KYC in someone's address, or for someone's address being attached to some specific person. And then we start talking about shared addresses and pooled funds and things like Cashew that Lola actually mentioned in this article. You start getting into this dynamic where the privacy map or the It's not really the map. The characteristics of Bitcoin in the context of privacy are far, far more favorable, without even necessarily a change to Bitcoin itself, but simply because we are using it differently, because we're not constantly integrating into third-party vulnerabilities. And then when you think about this as a network as a whole, an information exchange as a whole, that's where you start thinking about DNS. You start thinking about IP addresses. You start thinking about social media. And you realize how many of the tools that we could get additional privacy with Bitcoin still rely on on centralized layers that don't have the properties necessary to securely develop those tools or to create those environments. A great example is BIP47. So Lola brought up BIP47, and for the sake of simplicity, it's essentially a way to publish a piece of information, a notification transaction, onto Bitcoin that doesn't actually do anything except sit there in order to establish a shared secret with another party that you are trying to send Bitcoin to, so that addresses can be generated between those two parties privately rather than shared over some communications channel. Because if I'm publishing online, or if I'm publishing, you know, in social media or something, or in a message, a DM on Twitter or something like that, someone else is going to be exposed to that or be privy to that information. And then worse, if I'm doing what has been common practice for a really long time in Bitcoin, if I'm just posting an address somewhere, well, then it's blatantly obvious, and I'm essentially broadcasting to everyone my balance and any and all transactions that I ever receive. So BIP47 in creating these paynims is a way to allow people to independently have a means to create addresses, to generate them independently in a private manner so that they're doing it privately, and they can send it to an address that you own that is behind your keys, and that you can watch Bitcoin and notice when this occurs. The problem, obviously the big drawback, is UTXO bloat. It creates an address or a transaction in Bitcoin that essentially must always be there and yet is never going to be spent. So it's essentially a permanent thing on the chain. It's kind of like using the Bitcoin blockchain as DNS, or almost in a sense using it like in a way to like issue usernames or something like that. It's not really that, but you can kind of think about it like that for the sake of thinking about data that gets stuck onto the blockchain that you wouldn't remove. Now, there is a caveat that, like, newer versions of BIP47 have, I think it's version 4 of the PayNim protocol, or the idea of payment codes, actually has it so the notification can be done in the initial payment, so you don't have to do multiple transactions, and I think it actually utilizes Taproot, so the new signature scheme. But the funny thing is I think it's kind of obsoleted already. And Lola talks about it in this piece specifically, is about the benefit of Nostr in this regard. Because Nostr is censorship resistant, and because it is encrypted by default, because every user is a key, we suddenly have, without actually having a privacy protocol, we actually enable the means of private, secure communications simply by the fact that we have a protocol in which the owner, in which the user themselves, can own their profile and their data. Merely by having a secure authentication scheme that is not centralized, we essentially have a means to distribute this information securely without needing the Bitcoin blockchain, without needing to bloat the Bitcoin blockchain. Now, there is a really good caveat is, and I think we've talked about it, I think I read a piece about UTXO on the show, which is a really, really clever system that essentially allows you to rebuild the UTXO set from essentially a root hash. Like, you know, talking about going back to Bitcoin basics, I can't remember which one it was, about hashes and proof of work, about how everything is a fingerprint, and you can create these hash trees that allow you to combine things, and then you can essentially You know, you can take like 1,000 different items and you can combine them in just a few hashes that like just go travel up a tree of combining these things together into higher and higher layers of hashes. And essentially with just a path, like essentially just a series of hashes, you can prove that yours is in the data set. Well, that's essentially what you can build in the node, or the client can build in the node for the set of transactions that are valid in Bitcoin, and then you update it with every single Bitcoin block. The thing is that blocks have to be propagated. It's not like this wouldn't be consensus code, but it would be something similar to Neutrino, to the filters, to block filters that we already have, in the sense that clients and nodes would have to build them, and you would want as many nodes as possible sharing this information out. It would essentially be like a new layer on top of it. Or it wouldn't do you a lot of good, or you'd still have to do a lot of computation and save a lot of the information. But if you could get a vast majority of the network running a U3XO system, well then, and nodes and wallets using that to prove the existence of a UTXO, you could essentially run like a hyper pruned node and still have all of the relevant, you wouldn't have to have the UTXO set, which is like lots and lots of data that you have to store in RAM, and that is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger as things go on, because the more people, like if you've got 1 billion users and each one of them has a single address in which they own Bitcoin in, well, that's 1 billion UTXOs. So this problem becomes pretty significant as you get more and more adoption and people actually sovereignly own Bitcoin. But what's beautiful is we got a lot of really cool cryptographic tricks and tools already in place, systems already in place to mitigate a lot of that bloat, or a lot of that trade-off, I guess. However, I wanted to give an example going back to Nostr, because payment codes, I still think, just in the context of like UTXO bloat, that it's a worthy trade-off. And just the fact that you need an extra transaction, I do not think is a huge negative, or at least I value the privacy aspect of it far more than I think the consequences of just like another Bitcoin transaction on the chain is. But we don't necessarily need it. We have these avenues now in order to do this safely and securely. And here's a really interesting story that happened to me not too long ago. Me and a friend, somebody I've been chatting with in Keat. And Keat is another example of something that's very similar to Nostr in the fact that it's built entirely on keys. Keat is peer-to-peer. So it's me directly talking to this other person rather than going through relays. So there's even fewer parties involved in this situation. It's only the people who are actually in these Keat rooms are actually hosting it. It doesn't have the network effect because there's not like a global element to it. But it is another extremely data agnostic protocol in the fact that like you can do anything with it. It's essentially BitTorrent, except that rather than needing like a static movie file or something, the files can be dynamic. They're essentially streams of data that can update constantly, and it's all entirely based on keys. So you simply trust and find each other by these keys. So I really have thought for a long time, and especially with my excitement about Nostr, I really think these two things can work together in tandem in amazing ways. And a really great example of how that actually happened is there was somebody who was having trouble trying to figure out how to recover. They had some weird quirk issue with a Lightning wallet and a channel, and they were afraid they lost, I can't remember what it was, like a few hundred thousand sats in a channel because the wallet wouldn't recover them. It wouldn't see that balance. And he was trying to sort it out. I was trying to help, and I couldn't quite figure out their situation. And I said, all right, well, how about this? You have your seed backup and everything. So you've got the key that will access these coins wherever the hell they are. How about you withdraw everything else? You just get everything else out of that wallet, and you move it to a new set of keys because you're not using this wallet anymore anyway. So go ahead and get everything else out of it, and then share the key with me, And I will try to spin it up on a couple of different wallets and help you. It'll be easier for me to sort out the issue and look at what's going on and see if I can help get these coins back. And what's funny is I ended up not really being of much use. We still did go back and forth, but we suddenly had a weird issue where we were trying to figure out how to securely A, confirm that it was me, and then B, securely communicate some seed words. And in this situation, it's obviously extremely important. I mean, granted, we know there's only like a few hundred thousand sats on the line, but it's really important to be able to confirm who you were talking to and know that you securely sent that information, that somebody else cannot see it. And what was funny is we actually had all the avenues at our disposal in order to do that. So both Keet and Nostr are encrypted by default. So a Nostr DM is encrypted, and Keet is the entire mechanism by which you find other people and you send messages is an encrypted mechanism. However, I can change, particularly in Keet, if he doesn't have me as like slash tags, like Keet still doesn't have contact, like explicit contacts lists. So the keys are generated on the fly per device. So until slash tags and the like get implemented, he can't like add me as a contact. I basically just put in my profile image and I say I'm Guy Swan, but technically somebody else could do the exact same thing and trick this person. So we're like, okay, well, how do we? And immediately we were just like, oh, well, we'll just set up a Keet room and it's encrypted and everything's good and I'll just send you the seed. And I was like, well, hold on a second. Let's make sure that you can verify it's me. So what we actually did is we sent, I think it was over three different channels. I think what we did is we sent, first we made a Keet room that was just him and myself, and we both connected to it. Then he contacted me separately by finding my verified account on Nostr, which was verified with my Twitter account. And my Twitter account obviously has the largest following and the largest history to suggest or to prove, to act as verification that I am me, that I have access to that account. And then he contacted me over Telegram. I believe this is the setup that we did. And I've actually done something similar with another person, just in troubleshooting different things and wallet files and stuff that people have lost. But now we have two censorship-resistant, direct and encrypted means of communication, and one that was already established, this one being Telegram. And I think we did 12 words of the seed over Keet, 11 over Nostr DM, and one, or maybe it was 11, 11, and two, and one or two over Telegram. Now, probably it would have been enough just to do Nostr and Keet, but I think it was beneficial to leave the last little bit to something where he was certain it was me, like that conversation had happened before. But we both just kind of kept going on about how fascinating it was that we were able to securely do that. And that through multiple different means that all had separate vulnerabilities, but separate trade-offs, you could essentially put back together this verification that I was me and that I was these accounts. And that there are no prying eyes that can look into our conversation. Now imagine this in groups. Like one of the most exciting things, especially when Lola was talking about like coin join transactions and that coordination, that's one of the very first things that I immediately thought about with Keet. Because Keet and Hole Punch, what these things do is they create like encrypted groups in this BitTorrent group where everybody forwards information to everyone else. And there is an explicit signature order for messages and things as they go in. And their most recent, or their update that is coming extremely soon, I believe it's going to be before the end of May, that they have been saying. But they call it their Big Rooms update because they're going to be able to, you're going to be able to quickly and data efficiently have rooms with thousands, tens of thousands of people in it. But now imagine this for encrypted pools of users, for mining pools, for channel pools for being able to do joint transactions together where users can sign, can do partially signed transactions, share them with someone else, and then go offline, and the group themselves can continue to basically share this around until they have signatures from everybody. And Nostr is exactly this sort of technology that enables these things to happen. We're able to build communities outside of the centralized avenues that were necessary before these protocols existed or before these protocols were adopted. And without these being explicitly privacy protocols or built as privacy solutions, the mere negation of the centralization of the platforms that we currently have to use in order to get a domain name, in order to have a username and a social profile, to verify who we are as a person, to communicate at all, to share these things with each other, to even own the data to begin with. When you eliminate that point of failure and you enable sovereignty within these protocols, the benefits to privacy are staggering, because most of the privacy loss is in the fact that you have to use these centralized entities that allow you, that allow them to connect you to the privacy loss issue, to the KYC exchange, to the address that is associated with your identity, to see the message in which you shared with somebody the payment code or the address, or that you posted it in some specific forum that other people could see. You had no private means to deliver it in an encrypted method, in an encrypted mechanism, just to the people that you are used to, just to people that you trust. And I think we should not discount how big of an impact that can have when we can leverage these new systems. And if we are building a social network, I can't remember who it was. There was somebody just talking recently. I saw a little video clip, and I've been meaning to, I think it might have been Pablo. I don't know. But it's something I've talked about on the show, and I just thought he worded it so well. He put it so cleanly, was that the network effects of the walled gardens and the centralized platforms fight each other. I talk about it, the way that I've talked about it most specifically on the show is the idea of like Twitter and eBay, because I have zero following on eBay and I have a huge following on Twitter. Why on earth would I want to go to eBay to sell something? Like, why wouldn't I use my Twitter network? Well, because they're walled gardens, because these network effects fight each other. They are at odds. But with Nostr, with this new ecosystem that is being built, because it is data agnostic, because we can do Substack on top of it, because we can do Nostr Markets on top of it. And I really wish they just called it Diagon Alley. I wish they kept that. I think that's really cool. And talking about an appeal to nerds. Anyway, but because we can do Nostr Markets, because we can do eBay, these network effects benefit from each other. So maybe you only have 5% of the social media network effect, but you also have 5% of the eBay network effect. You also have 5% of the audiobook and publishing network effect. You have 5% of the OnlyFans network effect. Like, these things start to build on top of each other. And when you can bridge these things together, when suddenly the network effect of one content type or of one use case or of one community now magnifies the network effect of another, the feedback loop is really huge. And the necessary network size that you need in order to compete with a far more established centralized platform becomes far, far lower, because it compounds in other areas and other networks that you are trying to make use of. And I really think he was right in what he talked about. And when you have Lightning integrated directly into it, which is essentially a private, non-permanent record payments system, and then we have Cashew and Fediments, and we have these other mechanisms specifically to create federations, to create groups, to create shared custody and partially signed transactions, so that, and hopefully we get something like commitment soon, so you can actually have trust minimize or roughly arguably trustless dual or multi-party ownership of a single UTXO and of coordinating with other people to make CoinJoin transactions, to make PayJoin transactions, and connect directly to coordinators on something like a social media. Now you have a privacy market that you can connect directly to people, and people also do not know. It's not attached to any specific IP address or to any identity, and there's no central authority that's keeping this permanent record of who is connecting to who and who is requesting the information, because it's just this giant pool of users and relays. You can't fight that network effect. You can't beat it. There's no centralized platform that can do so. It was the lack of anything that could maintain, that could be sustained in that way, and the technology and the pieces of the puzzle necessary in order for users to create their identity and manage these things. And I think there's just a lot of different pieces that had to fall into place. And simply put, Nostr is working. It's working. And it's growing really fast. And it's the development on it is happening really fast. And I also think a lot of people are still discounting what's happening over with Hole Punch and Keat and Synonym and Slash Tags. I am still so freaking excited about that. You know, a lot of people have actually hit me up recently. It's like, are you still on the Keat thing? Because you talk about Nostr a lot recently. Yes, I am still 100% on board with this. And I am really stoked about their next few updates that are coming. And actually, I just started back up. Their mobile launch was a little because the mobile client had all of the major issues. In fact, probably a little bit worse than the original desktop client had. But I was happy to give them plenty of time. I probably think they just jumped the gun because they were really excited that the engine was working and they had it on mobile. But because it was really sluggish and rooms took forever to load, and sometimes like messages would come in delayed, I didn't really use it much. I use the desktop app every day. Like, it's open right now on my computer, and I use it for a lot of different reasons, because the desktop app just screams. Like, it's flawless, in my opinion. I still have a group that it's the group that we have with Bitcoin Audible for a couple of people that I work with. That is what we use. We still use Keat. I've got a podcast coming later this week. We're going to be doing it over Keat video and audio chat. It really is great. It's still missing a lot of like core features of like a chat app, but the function, like, it works, and it's kind of crazy. It's a little bit psychotic that it's purely peer-to-peer and it works as well as it does. And it's not even got blind forwarding, in which like other contacts can forward your messages for you. That's not even there yet. There are so many like major things that could improve the operation of Keat and how these rooms work and how data propagates on the network. And they're not even there yet. And it works amazingly on desktop. So I am 100% on the Keat train until something devastating happens or it hits some sort of plateau that there's just somehow no going past, but I don't see it. And they're about to have a enormous update, a huge shift in its operation. And recently, actually, I just started, like 2 days ago, I got back onto Keat Mobile and updated because I was a couple versions behind. And Keat Mobile is actually working really, really well. I jumped into one of the really, really big rooms, and it still had to load all the way from the beginning. And I think it like took 20 or 30 seconds to get into the room, but it was updating at the end. It was updating extremely fast and in line with all the conversation. Like, it didn't feel delayed. I could still jump in and out of the room really, really quickly afterward, which had been a problem before that. But just think about the possibility of coordination. When you have these decentralized means of decentralized contacts lists where you carry your contacts with you, and the means of communication is explicitly encrypted and is explicitly free of centralized servers, both in the Nostr social media sense and in the Keat direct video chat and direct communications sense. And even that is able to deliver applications, is able to deliver media and all sorts of things without centralized servers, without having to have other nodes specifically pay for enormous amounts of bandwidth. Like, that's one of the big downfalls of Nostr, I think, or not downfalls, but one of the big hurdles of Noster, which is why I've been trying to push the let the relay, give the relay a block in your zaps to essentially offer up like half of all of the zaps to the relay that is feeding your information to the user. I still really think that's a really promising way to make sure that capital, that money is flowing to the relays with passively, I think is the really, really critical thing. Because JB specifically said, Will specifically said that it was costing him, which is probably worse now because Noster keeps growing, but it was costing him $600 a month to keep the relay for the amount of traffic and bandwidth that was running through the relay. So this needs to be monetized. There needs to be a mechanism of funding the infrastructure. And luckily, we have all of those mechanisms available. We have all of the tools available, and we have a sovereign, instant, and extremely cheap payment mechanism, payment network, in order to build on top of this for all of the potential services and privacy benefits and coordination efforts and a public and private key management that you would need in order to build out an entirely new infrastructure. It's just that we literally have to start it from sticks. It's like having all of the tools necessary to rebuild your city or your society without all of the centralized failures or major problems or inconveniences or, you know, third party, the avenues for tyranny and the loss of sovereignty in this society, except that you literally have to go back to the very foundation. You go back to the absolute beginning. You can't even use the bricks that you've already made. You're in the wood with sticks and logs, and you have to start from zero and rebuild this thing. And that is what I feel like is happening on the internet right now. And we're figuring out those tools and how to build those things. And I think Lightning Network was a major, like a massive first move in that direction by taking the soundness, the incorruptibility of the Bitcoin money and building a decentralized, sovereign, trustless, global, instant payment network on top of it. So we had the 0-to-1 invention of Bitcoin and sound money in the digital space, digital cash. And then we had the cryptographic, private-esque payment network. I keep calling Lightning a privacy payment network. And it's also not exactly true. Like, they're Tor onion routed. And we talked about this quite a bit on the show. So, you know, with caveats, go back and listen to those episodes if you want the nuance in that conversation. But for all intents and purposes, Lightning Network is far more private than Bitcoin, particularly with payments. Like, you can still find nodes and you can find channels and you can find balances, but it's far, far more difficult to isolate and find permanent records of all of the payments on the Lightning Network. In fact, even trying to figure out and calculate how many payments have happened is really difficult. And you can see this because everybody who tries to make a report on it has wildly different numbers. So there should be some indication that it is in fact like looking into a black box, because you have to contact nodes directly to get this information from them. That, in my opinion, is a massive privacy benefit to Bitcoin and the network. And it's just incredible to think of the implications when you start putting these technologies together. Because once you have a decentralized, sovereign, stateless money, and then you have a decentralized, instant, cheap, global payments network, suddenly you have the building blocks necessary to create an entirely new mechanism of monetization, which is then what enables us to completely redesign and rebuild the infrastructure for the internet and completely rethink the security and sovereignty of the social networks and the things that we have come to rely on that have re-centralized the internet infrastructure. And we have the decentralized payment mechanism to remove the third parties, to remove the advertisements, to come up with entirely unique monetization models. And the very goal, the way to solve this problem, is to create as much economic activity as possible, while at the exact same time, the network effects of each individual type of content and type of economic activity that we build on top of them compounds the network effect of all the others. This is going to be crazy. And I just think it's one of those things like Bitcoin and Lightning that it will be very, very slow. It will be gradually, then suddenly. And these things will continue to feed back on each other and then begin growing to a point in which the momentum simply can't be stopped. And we will go through an entirely new era of internet disruption that will basically re-disrupt all of the major internet companies. I think this would be the third major era of massive disruption within the internet economy and how we relate to it, which I guess you could arguably say you could maybe combine the first two, and you could maybe say you could maybe break this one up into two if you wanted. You know, it's all perspective and like how you want to weigh one thing versus the other. But regardless, we're going through another massive, massive shift, and it is specifically made possible. And I think it will only be specifically facilitated because Bitcoin and Lightning makes novel relationships and novel systems of privacy, of ownership, and of sovereignty, of information exchange possible on the internet that simply were not before. More specifically, that were not sustainable before, that could not scale, and now they can. And that is going to change everything. And Nostr, a protocol that really has nothing to do with privacy, is going to be a massive privacy benefit to Bitcoin. And it is going to enable things that we can only begin to imagine now. And I am stoked. And funny, you know what's really kind of cool? Nostr's a little bit cured my addiction to social media. I was in this constant like doom scrolling, have to see what's on Twitter. And now I miss like 3 or 4 days on Twitter at a time. And I go back and just kind of like see what's going on. And I scroll for a little bit. And I still do check Nostr quite a bit, but it's not as addictive. So I don't feel like this guilt or like I'm being trapped when I go there. I just kind of go, I check up, I send some messages to people, I post some stuff, and then I leave. Like I don't feel like I have this unhealthy relationship with it, which makes it okay to go. I have no idea what that is, if it's just like because there's no algorithm yet in whatever client that I'm using that's trying to trap me there. Somehow my relationship to it is different. And that's kind of exciting. I found myself being way more focused and getting a lot more out of social media. Getting a lot more out of Nostr than I did of social media in general. I really can't wait until like most articles and stuff end up getting posted on Nostr or Blogstack or the Nostr, you know, Medium alternatives. And I think it was Pablo is building the reading app. Pablo, you got to speed up. You got to speed it up. You told me about this like 2 days ago. I can't believe you're not done. But a reader app and bookmarks app that will like collect these things and basically prevent or get around these stupid walled gardens of Scribd and Pocket and Readwise and all of these bullshit things that I save bookmarks for and I can't consolidate. Some of them I can't even export from. It's just a nightmare of trying to save things on the internet, and it just doesn't have to be. It makes no sense for them to be that way. And now we have this open protocol in order just to organize things, just to keep bookmarks and integrate with other apps and note-taking things that you're using, like Obsidian. Like, it just, the freedom to experiment and to build. It's just, I'm so excited about it. I don't know, I've loved it, and it continues to get better, and I just think, oh, hashtag grow Nostr, by the way. This is actually something I'll cover that this week. I've been meaning to, because I've been wanting to talk about this on the show as well, because Nostr has been almost purely, or at least for a good portion of it, has been just Bitcoiners. And finally, there seems to be these corners of Nostr that are popping up that I'm bumping into and that other people are seeing that have nothing to do with Bitcoin. And in fact, people don't even know Bitcoin. They're first bumping into Bitcoin on that and on Nostr. And Nostr is propagating as a social media network and as an alternative to these other things. And really, I think this is where it's going to shine. This is where it's going to be a straight up game changer. And so we're going to be talking about this a lot. There's an endless amount of stuff to unpack. I feel like Nostr and Keet and Hole Punch is like another whole layer on top of Bitcoin and Lightning that has finally arrived. Like there's been huge stages in Bitcoin's life cycle that I think represent the shift in focus from one layer to the higher layer up. And I genuinely think of Nostr and Hole Punch and these things, these private public key systems and these public networks, these protocols for social media and for finding, addressing, and sharing information with other parties in a sovereign way, in a censorship-resistant way. This is layer three. This is what is on top of Lightning and what is made possible by Lightning. And I think we are entering a new era. It feels like it. And there's something incredibly exciting happening here, and I think it is going to be a fundamental part of the new internet that is being built. And in 20 to 30 years, we're going to look back, and it's going to be insane to think that we were here when Nostr just had, you know, 100,000 users or whatever it is, and we were just talking about what you can do if by merely having a public-private key system to send somebody an encrypted message over relays that can't be centrally shut down or controlled. We are living in the future. It is just not evenly distributed yet. So, with that, we will close this one out. Thank you guys so much for listening. Much love to our amazing sponsors, to CoinKite and the Cold Card hardware wallet for keeping my Bitcoin safe, and the TapSigners because they're just so freaking cool. I love these things. Check them out. I've got a link right there in the show notes with a discount code 9% off, baby. And if you're getting into Bitcoin, and actually we will be covering this later on this week when I have like concrete details for everybody in North Carolina with Swan Bitcoin. Dude, don't even get me started. But Swan Bitcoin is the best Bitcoin onboarding. Go straight there. Skip all the shitcoin exchanges. My link is right there in the show notes, and you will also help out this show. And of course, Fold, the sats back card, the debit card that gives you sats back on everything in your life. If you're not getting free sats just for using a debit card, well, then I feel sorry for you. You're a sad person, and you should upgrade this situation with Fold. Go to bitcoinaudible.com/fold, and it'll take you right there with all you need to know. Don't forget to subscribe, everybody. Again, thank you so much for listening, and I will be back with another episode tomorrow. I am Guy Swan. This is Bitcoin Audible, and until next time, guys, take it easy. The universe, our physical universe, has that property that makes it possible for an individual or a group of individuals to reliably, automatically, even without knowing, encipher something so that all the resources and all the political will of the strongest superpower on Earth may not decipher it. And the paths of encipherment between people can mesh together to create regions free from the coercive force of the outer state, free from mass interception, free from state control. Julian Assange.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.